testing, Senate meeting.
Here I am.
January 18th, testing, Senate meeting. January 18th, testing, Senate meeting. January 18th, testing, Senate meeting. January 18th, testing, testing.
So, here's over there.
Hello.
Go ahead and get started. So officially call the meeting to order. First thing on the agenda is the minutes from our last meeting. I got a motion to approve, please.
No problem.
Are there any comments, feedback, questions, errors, and so forth? Gone once. Gone twice. Okay, so they're approved by acclamation. Going down to announcements. I just have a brief, very brief report today. I talked last month about the Senate Review Committee's going through the Constitution and bylaws of the Senate, and will be posting some changes to us sometime fairly soon. And we're hoping to bring those back in February to present to you and to get the conversation going on campus. And I think I mentioned one might will deal with the FAC representative being a Senate member in some capacity. A second one, which I don't think I mentioned last time, has to do with how we have our Nominations Elections Committee statements, directions, etc. They conflict between what the Senate says and what the Nominations Elections Committee's bylaws state. So we're going to be going through actually the same agenda for now, but looking at those bylaws and such, and going to try to make that all work together, although it has in the past. And then the last thing, last change we made proposed has to do with, again, having a part-time faculty member representative on the faculty senate, on the university senate, who can vote. So proposed language for that at the next meeting as well, I hope. That's all I have. So President Clark. You're the super senator.
Got me promoted.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our spring semester. My apologies for those that were at the spring opening yesterday afternoon, but basically you're going to hear the same thing right now. So, but for those who don't, I'm going to start, and actually this is Jay Murray's area, but I'll start with good news or preliminary good news on our application so far. And a lot of this is driven by our 7 New York County initiative. So we're up 19% in total apps from 3,566 fall 2016 to 4,241 fall 2017, or plus 675 applications. Of the 7 New York counties, last year were at 183, this year 456, for plus 273, or 149%. What we're also doing, and Jay explained yesterday, is one of the very nice features of the initiative is there are six SUNY community colleges among the seven. Putnam is the smallest. Putnam does not have their own community college. Students in Putnam County either go usually to Westchester Community College, which I think has a population of about 25,000, or over to Dutchess. So last Friday we went with an old friend of mine and colleague, Dr. Cliff Wood, president of Rockland Community College, Jay and I, and found out that there is a Hudson River SUNY Community College consortium of the six provosts. So Provost Alexander and Jay and staff are going to meet with them, I believe, next month, sit down and try to start working on transfer and articulations. And you know why this is so important. It's on our retention side. And so getting a nice transfer population from those six community colleges going. And Cliff gave me a nice surprise because he looked at me and said, well, what's your in-state? And I said, 10,000. He goes, ah, they send over, I think, 150 to 170 students each year to Ramapo College in New Jersey. He goes, Ramapo's 14. This is good math. So, but everybody knows, you know, apps, as I tell people, there are two results with apps. One is really negative. If you're down, that's really bad news. If you're up, I call that a positive neutral, meaning we're trending the right way. But no, we have two big months. In May, the deposits are due. That's our first strong indicator. Then, of course, in August, when the students actually appear, will give us a good sense of what we're doing right and what we need to do. Because this, remember, is a two-year pilot and is an exclusive just with us. Eastern, Southern, and Central are not. So we have this two-year window. The other thing I wanted to mention, and we have a number of the people in the room already working with what we're calling the CSCU Working Group, which I talked about yesterday. This is a system-wide effort really to generate revenues and savings system-wide for the benefit of all our colleges and universities. And there's six areas that we're looking at. One, branding and marketing. Two, compliance issues. Three, enrollment retention strategies. Four, financial aid. Five, human resources. And six, purchasing and contracts. Myself and also Karen and Dan are part of the overall branding and marketing group. It's really that age-old question. You know, UConn gets all the publicity. How about us? So it's looking at branding both CSCU, what is this system, and then best practices for each campus or college or university to follow. And also Jay Brower, Jay and I was just talking to Jay on the human resources group, and George Claffey is on the purchasing and contracts group, and hopefully I haven't left anybody out. So next steps is these groups are going to make initial preliminary recommendations, and then we're going to have, you know, President O'Grady certainly knows are the importance of shared governance and system-wide consultation. So there'll be a feedback system-wide. We're going to use online surveys, focus group sessions. So this is going to be continuing through this semester, so we'll try to keep you posted as much as possible. And as I said, we have a number of people in the room working on these groups, so we can keep you in contact. The last one is important is legislative lobbying, and I talked about it last time. You know, the session just began first week of June. It's January through June. This is a daily grind. This is just not a couple of meetings with our legislators. So yesterday morning, we invited Dan. You know, we wanted Dan there, but I want to thank Jennifer Ryan for coming. It was really the opening shot. President Ojakian came, our Director of Government Relations at CSCU, Sean Bradbury. The legislator's joke was Sean lived in the Capitol building, right, Jennifer? He's there 24/7. But we've now already set up one-on-ones. The next step are one-on-ones I'll be having in Hartford and here in the area with our legislators. President Ojakian and Sean Bradbury will do the lobbying. We'll then testify before the Appropriations Committee, then go up to Hartford again with our students. You know, they are the stars, the reason we're here. And finally, we'll have a CSCU Day in the Capitol building right before the final adopted budget is our final lobbying push. So far, so good, but you have to keep right on top. And I think, you know, Jennifer, they showed what we're trying to show on the good side. And we talked about, I'm sorry for going along with Dan, but the 10%, yes, the 10% impact statement had the desired effect. Because I talked to legislators before, we talked to legislators yesterday, and they were shocked that the OPM even requests at a 10% cut. So at least I think we got them in good spirit. But what we showed them yesterday, there was a number of presentations by our senior staff. Then we had our students talk about our student entrepreneurship program, all the great new academic programming. And I think even some of the longtime legislators had their eyes open. And we had three new legislators, too, which are critically important to get them on our side. So what we're telling them is very simply, and I think President O'Jakey made a great point, even if you didn't cut us this year because of inflation, we're going to have losses. And this is what we can do. You've seen it here at Western and throughout CSCU, how we're serving the state. And our students tend to stay in state, and they're our generation. Just imagine what happens if you cut us. So they saw what all the great things we can do, and we like their support, and we like additional funds, by the way, too. So that's it for me. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. So speaking of the FAC, Jay Brower's here to give us a report on what's been going on recently at the FAC level.
Hello, I have two information items to report on. The first is from the December meeting of the FAC. At that meeting, William Lugo, who's the FAC representative from Eastern, brought to the committee a resolution and petition that's been formed on campus by the, I suppose you call it, the chapter of Connecticut Students for a Dream. So these are students who have an undocumented immigration status, and they are looking to generate support for Eastern and more generally for institutions throughout the CSCU system to support students who have openly acknowledged, in particular, openly acknowledged the immigration status through DACA, the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals that Obama put in place. And this obviously comes about in the aftermath of the presidential election. I'm sure you're all aware, well aware that Donald Trump has suggested he's going to engage in the mass forced deportation of people who are here without legal immigration status. And that particularly impacts students because they've come forward, they've put their name into the system, expecting a humane, legal, and fair treatment. And now there is a, I think, I don't know if I would call it overwhelming, but it sure does feel overwhelming sense, that honesty and participation in the legal process is going to be all for naught, and in fact is going to serve them detrimentally. And so the resolution that the FAC passed as the meeting was left was more of a placeholder in the hopes that once further details about the president-elect's plan come into focus, that further action might need to be taken. President Ojakian was at the meeting, and he stated his position. He is in support of Connecticut Students for a Dream, wants to aid students in any way he can who might be subject to punitive action. At the same time, he was very reticent to engage in the sanctuary campus rhetoric. He believes that there are legal and political and institutional nuances that have yet to be sorted out, including what the liability for the system is if campuses identify themselves as sanctuary campuses in terms of their responsibility to students and whether or not the institutions can meet that. My voice at the FAC, I think that there needs to be more unequivocal support for our students. Many stories were offered at the FAC of students who are literally terrified. There is currently an ICE and Immigration Customs Enforcement memorandum which prohibits the enforcement of immigration actions except for in extreme circumstances on the grounds of educational institutions, so they're not at this moment going to come snatch people from classrooms. But there's no guarantee that that is going to continue on. That memorandum could be rolled back day one of a new administration. So I anticipate bringing to you in a further meeting a resolution to be debated by the Senate in support of Students for a Dream, students covered by DACA, et cetera.
I could just throw in, so Central Connecticut, their Senate passed one in December. And so we have their language, and we're looking at that language, and we use that in some modified form to present here.
All right, and the second item that I would like to bring to your attention is something that just arrived in my inbox yesterday, and that is the Human Resources Subcommittee of the Board of Regents has prepared a code of conduct, a draft policy that they anticipate will be applied to all employees across the system, from across units, different kinds of work, faculty, classified, confidential, what you name it, whatever classification or category of employment this code would be applied to. And there are a number of very troubling elements for the university community. And teaching faculty in particular. So the first that I think applies to everybody is the breadth of the policy. It is one of these kinds of things where it's like, don't do bad things, because if you do, you could be subject to professional discipline. Well, what's a bad thing? That's a pretty broad category and really open to a lot of moralizing and interpretation. And this is frankly one of the problems with these codes of conduct that you see across institutions and situations, is that the codes typically apply to conduct or speech that the institution deems unfavorable to their image. So you see these a lot in institutions that are especially religiously affiliated, very typically more fundamentalist, religious-oriented institutions, you know, things that break the you know, sacred covenants of the religious order, things like that. They're a bit more problematic in public institutions, especially when we consider them in light of the demands of academic freedom. So some things that I think fall under the purview of this policy would be, if any one of you wrote an editorial to the Hartford Courant that has charged political speech and makes the university system look bad, you writing it as a private citizen, not even identifying your professional affiliation. If they find out about it, theoretically, I think that could fall under the code of conduct and thusly result in negative professional consequences. Some of the other planks that are in this code of conduct, and by the way, this is a public document. If you want, I can send you the link. You can find it on the Board of Regents website. It's a link to a hypertext PDF type document thing. So some other planks that are in it are maintain and treat others with dignity, respect, and civility. The last one, of course, is a big issue, especially when we live in an age where being uncivil is sometimes defined as having a difference of opinion. And civility is, you know, readily understood to be a problematic area. And then the last one that is, I think, troublesome as well, comply with all applicable laws, rules, regulations, policies, and protocols. Well, what does that mean? If you get caught speeding and you're breaking state law, does that qualify? You know, certainly there's some offenses, like if you commit financial crimes and you teach accounting, that could have a real bearing on your professional status. But does speeding, if you're, you know, say a professor of JLA, I mean, it's a big open question that frankly isn't funny despite my laughter. Like I said, this is coming out of the HR subcommittee of the Board of Regents. There has not, at this point, to my knowledge, been any public debate or discussion about it, but I believe that's to occur tomorrow for the first time. So I'll keep you posted. I anticipate a strong response from the FAC.
Any questions?
What is coming out of again? Human.
The Human Resources Subcommittee of the Board of Regents.
Thank you, Jay. So we have one addition to the agenda. This is Veronica Canossas, our library director, is going to speak to us about the new library search system, or?
Yeah.
What do you call it?
West Search,
okay.
I'm going to lean over you if you haven't already used this computer. I'm going to talk really loud. We'll come back in a minute. So, again, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Veronica Canossas. I'm the director of library services here. Program manager for library operations for all of CSCU. And what I want to just make everybody aware of, we did get some communication last semester that this was coming, but we went live last Monday with a brand new library search system for all of CSCU. It is segmented by campus, so you still have access just to Western Connecticut State University's resources. But I want to point out a few things that you should be expecting to see when you do look for library resources. I did put a bookmark on the back table that has a direct URL on the back, and then some things that you should be looking for. The first, it's like that. Oh, thank you, Vanna. The first thing that you should be aware of is that the search system searches all content at the same time. So, for the last 150,000 years, you had to search books separately from articles, separately from other things. This kind of combines them all, but you still will have access to your separate databases. If you're doing very high-level research and you only want to search social work abstracts I used this morning, you can still do that, obviously. The prompt is search anything, and this really does appeal to our special ed, traditional age undergraduate students, so I will go and put my usual search in. You see my search? what? Nothing? What?
You can be fired.
Oh, did I get kicked off this? Did I get kicked off? I just want to show you this as well. You can test on yours. The webpage still exists. When you put something in that box, it will bring back the other results. You can search all content at the same time. You can borrow now not just from the CSU library, Central, Southern, and Eastern, but all of the institutions in the CSCU, including all of the community colleges and the state library. Doesn't sound like, but they have some really interesting collections at those community colleges, so you'll see as you search. You will use a sign-in button, which will give you access to request things from the Omaha. I'm just going to bring this back and see why this isn't working. This happens every time, doesn't it, right? I want to show you what your options are here. You can segment it so you can just look at the book. So if you are ahead media, DVD, so if you didn't want all the article information in with the books, you can search that. Just articles, just the course reserves, and then the last option is the CSU Library Consortium. It is mobile friendly, which is really, really exciting for, again, students that are traditional age. I did show it to, I showed it to my husband, who is a faculty member at Norwalk Community College, and he was like asking all these questions, and I showed it to my son, who was like, oh, cool. So they get it, it's not going to be a problem for them. You will, again, say have the same options you always had to search databases separately. There are going to be, we've been describing the process as you know, when you move into a new house, you, in the beginning, you pack up everything very neatly and carefully and put it in special places, and by the time you're actually out on your moving day, you're like throwing things in garbage bags and say, just get it over there. So throughout the semester, we'll be unpacking these garbage bags that we ended up throwing in at the last minute, because this is really a huge project to move 20 years worth of data from 17 institutions into this new system. It was a huge undertaking. But throughout the semester, you can expect improvements, slight changes, not to basic functionality, but the way things may appear. We feel like it's a very important platform for future collaboration throughout the system, including, although we're not there yet, some joint or cooperative subscriptions to databases that we can't afford on our own at Western. And maybe Central does, and so we're looking at ways that we can do some things collaboratively that will benefit all of us. And finally, Jennifer's getting a lot of props today. If you can find anything in this new system, it is all because of Jennifer. She did all of the work getting all of our data, again, 20 to 25 years worth of data from one system into the other. And it's, again, just like one of those things that every piece has to go into the right place, otherwise it just kind of chokes on everything.
Well, if it doesn't work, it's Jennifer.
It's my fault.
No, it's my fault if it doesn't work because I didn't. But thank you to Jennifer. Thank you. Can you give it a shot? It better be working after I'm done this. I'm just going to pretend it worked here. But try it. Look at it. If you have questions, you can ask your liaison librarians. You can email me. You can stop in the library. In the Haas Library, you can have a cup of coffee and talk to one of us, or a bagel. Visit us, and we're happy to hear any suggestions, questions, or comments that you have. You'll be getting more communication from us as things change and improve. Any questions?
Do the different CSUs have sort of different levels of, like, JSTOR? Do we all basically have the same JSTOR, or as you move from campus to campus, are we going to have different, you understand my question?
I do. We have a base level of JSTOR for the CSUs, for all of the CSUs. Some of them, Central and Southern being the specific ones, have more than we have. So we are moving towards, now we have a licensing issue with trying to figure this all out now that we're a consortium. So it's going to take some time to work it out, but we are hoping to get to a level where we can have access to all of those. Yes. And the other problem that people always ask this question that we do continue to have, again, a licensing issue, is we share our physical items, so a book can go from campus to campus. We do not share most of our ebooks. And people do have different ebooks. So we are looking, that's part of my job as this program manager, to look at ways that we can subscribe to content in one and have it accessed by all.
But currently we're still just us for the database.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Veronica.
Thank you.
Are there any other announcements? Okay, let's go on to unfinished business. And the first item there is the vision statement, which we talked about last time. And Ann and I and the steering committee were back and did some changes to it and bring it back to you today for approval. And again, as I did last month, I'm going to ask Jennifer to temporarily moderate the meeting so I can argue with you all about the vision statement.
A couple words about the way we are presenting the vision statements to you. We took Senator Puccini's words to heart about the difficulty of trying to write a statement as a Senate. So we've provided you with two choices, and obviously there are three choices there. You can vote for one or the other, or vote for neither. But we are hoping that one of the two statements will be satisfactory so that it can be hinged to the rest now of the strategic plan that has been passed, the mission statement, value statements, the goal statements, so that beginning soon, we can do the work to operationalize this strategic plan. So, questions, comments on the statements, the two statements that are before you.
So there was a motion on the floor from last time, and of course we have different statements this time around. I'm not sure what the best way to do this for the point of protocol, but we want to have a vote on one or vote on the other one of these two options today, or vote on both of them, I suppose, independently, so you can vote them up or down independently. So we have to ask for a motion, I think, to approve one of these two, then we can have discussion and go on from there.
I move that we vote on both of the statements today.
Can I get a second on that motion?
So voting on both statements today. There, it's an or.
I was just borrowing a brand new oral story, and I don't know why, but I happened to come across this issue that we have three options. So you can't vote yes or no. And what Roberts recommends, we're not bound to this, but it's your decision, but I will find out what Roberts recommends. Roberts recommends that in a case where there is more than two options to vote upon, and so you cannot have a simple majority, that what you should do is have a priority type voting precedence, voting strategy, so that you know how to proceed. That is the recommendation. What you do is your choice. So in this case, Roberts would be recommending, and there are many ways to do this, but for example, what you would vote for would be in order of your preference, none A or B. And then the one that has the most. If there was time, you go over there. If you prefer another way, that would be your priority.
May I ask a question? I had you until the end. So let's say that we have three choices, A, B, and C. Let's say, or none.
You have two choices, A, B, or C.
Okay. So, you know, people do that. So how do we determine which one's the winner?
Right. So there's a whole spectrum of approaches to priority voting. I did not anticipate this walking in today, so I didn't actually refresh my mind on how it is that you can do this. But there's...
Because it would be possible for...
There's all sorts of things that
one possibility is that one may be, have a plurality, but not a majority.
Correct.
May I
yes.
Recommend that we think about, like they do down in some of the states with a, they call it a jungle primary, I think, where everybody gets in and then you come, they do this in California too. They get two, you get your top two candidates and then you re-vote on the top two, unless one clearly has a majority. So a case of, I know they do this in Louisiana, and they did it in the Senate race in California. So the first person got, if a person gets 52% of the vote, then it's over. But if somebody gets a 48%, then the next highest gets, and they have a runoff.
The procedure you're describing is majority always wins, and then lacking the majority, you have, you go to the person who, for example, in this case, has the least, and you have a runoff on the feet, in this case, there's three, and you have a major set. Certainly, that's a way to do this.
So we could do this the way the Sam has recommended based on Robert's rules. We could do this the way Dean Martin has recommended. If it jives with the speaker.
Robert's rules does not stipulate how you approach it. They just say that to take some sort of preference order in what Dean Martin has just described.
Is
it
working?
Is it going to
work? Okay. We can certainly do it this way, or we could take a vote on each of the vision statements as suggested here on the draft paper that you received. Is there a preference one way or the other? Would you rather use the method suggested by Dean Martin?
Let's do that.
Any opposition to doing it that way? We do have a motion on the floor.
No, this
is really. If you're getting a Robert that says you can go by consensus, but nobody ever checks that part. That shit gets forgotten. But like at the beginning, it says, if you all agree, it's good.
All right, so we'll do this one first. So the motion is to vote on both statements today.
We do
all in favor of voting on both statements today?
Aye.
Any opposed?
What I was just trying to address here is we don't know how to implement that statement. And so we make the decision. And the Martin's suggestion is we vote on all three. Each one picks what they're going to vote upon. Vote A, vote B, vote C. If any of those are adjourned, and so it's a specific algorithm. We have the intent, but as stated, no way to follow through. So what Dean Martin has proposed is a method. Each person will vote upon one. The majority, if there is one, wins. If not, plurality is not necessarily the winner. We take the person who votes the one that has least, throw it away, and then everyone votes upon one and two. And if there was no objection, so I just don't.
So if that's the motion, we're going to vote on this today. It has been recommended that we use the method suggested by Dean Martin. That being the case, our options are none. The first draft statement, which is A, and the second is B. So A is the first, B is the second, and C is none. All right, I'm going to ask for a show of hands.
Can we
discuss? Can I interrupt for a second? Vice President, we should have a chance for discussion, actually.
Yeah,
I'd like to hear if folks have any preferences one way or the other first before we actually take a vote.
That's a good idea. So is there any discussion? Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I didn't make the last meeting in December. Maybe if I missed the discussion then. Did we discuss a lot premier public university, this phrase that could discuss?
What happened? We'll get a different language last time. We spent a lot of time going around in circles trying to find the language.
We did, okay.
And so we came back this time with some somewhat new language, and rather than trying to do that again, we'll hope we just vote on it as is. It may not be perfect, but we will never get a perfect statement out of this sentence. That's my thinking.
I feel you.
Is there any other discussion? Okay, so I'm going to request a show of hands for this vote. All those in favor of the draft vision statement A, please raise your hand.
So we now have a new vision statement. Thank you very much.
I'm supporting. I'm just supporting.
And thank you, Jennifer. Next on the agenda is the proposal to change the VA history. And I don't see Kevin here today, but if Joshua can respond to any questions, it would be fantastic. Are there any questions, comments, or Senator Rosenthal? Okay, hearing none, we had a motion to approve last time, so I'm going to go ahead and push you to vote. All those in favor of the changes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, if you ask that, thank you. And the third thing is the MBA proposal. So, Jim, do you want to come up front, please? And again, we had a motion to approve last time and a second, and so Jim is here to ask to answer any questions you may have. Are there any questions and comments?
Just wanted to acknowledge Sean's pointing out that there was a typo. There was, of course, introduction to financial accounting as listed in the program sheet actually went through curriculum process as introduction to financial statements.
Comments, questions? Okay, hearing none, let's go ahead and take a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there any other unfinished business? Okay, hearing none, let's go on to new business. We have one item today to speak to talk about the proposals to change, proposal to change the ITC bylaws. So, Kit, would you mind coming up and speaking to these, please?
My role with ITC is I'm the chair currently of that committee. The committee has been been working for a while on the revision of the bylaws for the committee's work, and it really has evolved out of the fact that the current bylaws, which are the ones that are on, if you've got the sheet, previous bylaws, really reflect a time and a context that no longer exists in terms of working with certain amounts of money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, and also, we have, the committee has acquired also, I think, a stronger role in terms of various projects within the technology center. Okay, so the revised bylaws, proposed revised revised bylaws, really reflect our current reality. So that's the short history, very short. Any questions?
I get a motion to approve, please.
So
moved. Second.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? Okay, today. Senator Martin.
Since you're reformulating the committee, was there any thought given to having representation outside of the MIS and CS departments? That's what I'm, you know, faculty representation outside of MIS and CS.
Well, first of all, this is, what's listed here is members. Mm-hmm. It's the one thing's probably not changed, that this is not a new list of additional members. Okay, that's that. And then secondly, the faculty are represented through the chairs of the different schools that are listed there.
So each school has a technology committee, Senator Martin, and this, the chair of that committee from each school and sits on this committee ex officio voting. Senator Forbes.
Following David's question, do you have an interest in having an one of our new, we have this new instructional technology people, right, who are working with us for our online courses and things? Would they be a good person to have represented there, because they would be trying to deal with moving our...
That's something we could take some consideration. Veronica, do you have any sense of an answer to that question?
You know what, I'm sorry, because my general services librarian now sits on the committee as my designee. I thought that the instructional designer was being added but she's been added to a lot of committees, so I might have just made an assumption.
Yeah.
I would suggest that she should be added, I think.
Now, is the instructional...
It's the distance education committee that she wants to be on as a member now. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I would suggest it is considered.
Senator Aubrey.
Here's also an instructional designer for the School of Professional Studies. It should be considered.
She's the instructional designer for the university, Aura is, mm-hmm. and then there are instructional, I don't know what they're called.
I understand that they meet regularly.
Yeah, so. They do meet regularly. There's a group called Title.
So then Aura would represent all
yes.
of them.
Right, okay. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So do you want to take this back to the
yes.
committee then and
yes.
bring it back to us again with after considering this question?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
Okay, so at the next meeting, I'm not sure when you're going to meet again with the ITC, but if you can meet between now and our next meeting, then once you come back in February, if not, come back in March and address
it. Great. Thank you.
Is there any other new business? Senator Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Jim.